get back to full strength. Malkin to the net, saved by Lucan, and scores! Oh. Malkin from his knees with career goal, number 500. Got Crosby right in front of the net. Good block shot by Greenway there as he dropped down to get a piece of that one. Carlson, far post, scores. Sidney Crosby. Textbook Penguins power play goal, and they win it in overtime, 6-5.
We kind of did things that hurt us towards the end of the game there, and then obviously in overtime too, they get a power play, and I think they're going to score when you give them too many looks like that, too many power plays, and tonight's game, we beat ourselves. So.
I thought our puck management in the second period was terrible. You know they were going to press. We played too much one-on-one hockey, and then I think at the end of the night, we just weren't strong enough around our net. You look at some of the goals. You got to be stronger than that. The momentum was going back and forth every way. I think they fed off a lot of special teams. I mean, look at some of the, you know, the calls we had against us. And that team feeds off their power play, and I think that, you know, we have to try to recover.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Sabres, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Well, hi, everybody. Your challenge today is to tell me what organization in professional sports, you cannot name your own, is more annoying than the Penguins. Who's really more annoying than the Pittsburgh Penguins?
I think a lot of people would say Chiefs.
They haven't been around for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
These Penguins are... Yesterday we lovingly talked about, oh yeah, Malkin and Crosby. Wow, 20 years together. Can you believe it? Yeah, 20 years together.
And then the whole night was just a celebration of them.
Yes. The Sabres
steal their lunch money for the 5 millionth time.
It was every Sabres Penguins game that it's ever happened. The Sabres were NPCs in this game, to Malkin and Crosby being the main characters.
Do you know what it felt like to me? Last night was on national TV, and like I saw a lot of complaints. Like, man, this feels like a home broadcast, right? One, the Sabres and the Penguins have earned that sounding like a Penguins home broadcast, maybe.
Yes.
Two, you know what it reminded me of was when the Bills hosted the Patriots on Sunday Night Football in 2007. Patriots are going for history. Like, we're just here.
Yep.
Right? This is the Patriots show. This is all about them. You're just kind of a sideshow to this. You're just present at the game. That's what last night, I mean, felt like at times, where like this is just a celebration of Crosby, Malkin, and the Penguins, and the Sabres are just kind of here.
Are the Sabres going to get tabbed for Ovechkin's chance at history early in the season on TV?
Next year?
Listen, we're on milestone watch.
I mean, it could happen. They play like the fifth final game against Washington, so it could even happen at the end of this year.
He doesn't have a real chance this year, does he?
He needs 41.
He needs 41.
Yeah, he could do that. He did it, I think, 2 years ago.
How many does he have so far?
I looked the other day. I looked last night. I think he has only played like 2 games.
Okay. Ovechkin, that
is. 3 assists, no goals. Okay, so.
All right. Well, hey, hi. We'll talk about Amari Cooper. We'll talk about the Bills and Titans. I mean, you know, what do you say about last night's Sabres game? They played pretty well early.
Mm-hmm.
At the first intermission, you're probably thinking, I'll tell you what I thought. When the Paterka goal went in, I thought, that's going to be the difference, is they're not going to give away leads. They're going to do the best thing possible, which is, oh, 2-0 to 2-1. How about 3-1? Boom. Mm-hmm. Game over. The game was over until Dylan Cousins gave up the puck on the wall on the power play. The game was over. I mean, it's 3-1. You're on a 4-on-3 power play, mid-second, late second. The game was just going to die a slow, pointless, lame final 30 minutes until Cousins turned that over.
You know, ideally, you would make it 4-1
right, on
a 4-on-3 power play, which is a lot better than a 5-on-4 power play.
Yes, right. The game was primed to be killed off. And
we also, if you were watching on TV, thought Paterka scored again at one point because the play-by-play announcer thought he scored.
Yep.
So the score bug did read 4-1 for a second. No single event, though, cost them that game more than that one Cousins play.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you want to say...
He is lost at sea.
You want to say momentum. I wouldn't even say momentum so much as I'd say it made the game a game. It kind of wasn't one. The Penguins had one goal in the first period, and the Sabres immediately responded, and the Cousins play brings them back in it, which is disappointing. I'll say this about the Sabres. I was thinking this during the game. So a couple things happened. They blow the lead to go down 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
They come back 5-4.
That's stunningly, right?
That's different.
Yeah.
That's different. And ultimately, they get a point. Why? Because they take a penalty in overtime. I mean, and these penalties... Everything around penalties with the Sabres is 89% of their problem. They take too many penalties. Mm. They take dumb penalties. They cannot score when the other team takes a penalty. Mm. In fact, they give up goals everything is about what happens in penalties. And if you think about the final 90 seconds of two games, they are that far away from us feeling pretty good. If they had gotten the Kings game to overtime, we'd feel better. There's a point. And if they had closed out last night, there's a point. And they're fine. And I'll tell you, like, the optimistic thought, you tell me if this is crazy or not. Every year we get into this spot with the Sabres, and every year it's, I mean, look at the standings. What are they going to do? They're going to go on a run? I actually think this is, you can tell me I'm crazy. I think the way that they play, they will have a stretch this year where they win like 7 or 8 out of 10. I think they will have that. Last year, what? They hadn't won 3 in a row all year?
I think 3 in a row. They did 3 in a row once, and they never did 4 in a row.
Right.
I think that's, yeah.
At one point, there was a 2 in a row watch for months. There was a 2 in a row watch.
Uh-huh.
I know it's not going to be crafty to say it today when they blow a lead and they're 1-3-1. But I think they do have the parts. Paterka back. The goalies are usually good. I might want to go with Devin Levi a little bit more. I might like lean into that a little bit more. But I don't know if it's optimism. That's not the right word. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. I just don't think they will live the floundering life that they've lived for a couple seasons, or at least a season last season under Granato. They've started this season looking the same floundering kind of life, but do you want some numbers? Do you want to trust any of the fancy numbers? Do you care?
I feel like I'm almost exhausted by them.
Okay.
Because there have been other times
in recent years
where they've been good in the numbers.
How many times at 5-on-5 have they been 10th in expected goals?
Maybe that high.
10th in expected goals percentage. At actual even strength. Scoring chance, 4. At 5-on-5, where are they? 5th. High danger chances 4 at 5-on-5. Where are they? 6th.
Yep.
This is a team that is, I think, showing signs of life, and they are getting fatally flawed and killed by bad plays. Whether it's a Samuelson penalty or a Samuelson giveaway, or it's the Cousins play. It's, you know,
that's the thing. What if they're just kind of a dumb team?
That could
be a fatal flaw.
But don't you think that's the whole point of the coach being here? Is that this coach is supposed to, and it's been 5 games, but this coach is supposed to help them figure that out. Granato's job was develop them, and Lindy's job is to hone them into a better unit that can get through things, blah, blah, blah. I don't need to use all the words. Just, to me, you couldn't ask for much better at 5-on-5, and everything else kills them.
Well, even that, though, like, they could be that good at 5-on-5 all year, and if they're the worst power play in the NHL...
We've seen that movie before. They'll miss the playoffs.
They'll miss the playoffs.
Yep, that's right. That's what they were last year.
They are 0-15 so far to start this season.
And
they have a shorthanded goal. They've scored...
That's right.
They've allowed more goals when they're on the power play, and they have scored more goals when they are down a man.
Yeah. I know that this year's power play, the goal is, like, we're not just going to be a team that lets Thompson rip it from the dot. I would say, why not? It did work for a long time. Can it still be in the mix? Can it be part of it?
I just think they're easy to defend in that way.
They're easy to defend if that's the only thing you do.
Yeah.
But if that is part of it, then I think you're fine. It was super effective for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. At one point, they had Olofsson on the other side.
I think
that worked for a while. They have nobody on the other side.
It's the same mindset as actually what the Bills just did with Amari Cooper.
Yes.
Cooper comes in, and he should drag attention away from Kincaid and Shakir in the middle of the field. What I need is somebody on the other side of Tage Thompson, the power play, to drag the penalty kill a little bit over.
Yep.
But Zucker is the guy that they've been trying out at that.
Isn't that your top 6 forward you wanted to sign in the offseason that you didn't get done? I mean, I don't know if it's exactly a power play.
They probably have wanted that to be Patrick Kane.
Maybe.
If we're being real.
Yeah.
For over a year. They've probably wanted a guy like that to be that answer. Patrick Laine was available. That wasn't my favorite idea. But, yeah, the guy they could have added in the offseason. But really, shouldn't that guy be Paterka?
Probably.
What? Like, he's not even... He got 2 games on the top unit at the start. Granato really never put him on the top power play unit. So, that one's always been a little bit of a head scratcher. Maybe he's just not good at it. But I don't know. He's a lefty shot, so he would be on his one-timer. Or actually, am I wrong on that? He would not be on his one-timers, I think, actually. But whatever. He would be on the other side. He's your second best shot. You're just never going to have an extended look at what he looks like opposite Tage. But, man, I don't know. The 5-on-5 numbers are good, but and I need them to be able to finish these chances, too. And I don't know how many players on this roster are good finishing goal scorers. I think you might have three. Two?
Thompson, Paterka.
Tuck?
Supposed to be Quinn, and he's not it right now.
No, Quinn, I mean, Quinn's almost hiding under Cousins for how bad that's looking right now.
Yep.
You have two sixths of your top six are just giving you nothing. Absolutely nothing.
So,
and that can't, they won't, that is one, another fatal flaw that would cost them the playoffs. Those two cannot play like this at all for even weeks at a time if they want to be a playoff team this year.
Here's what I would ask regarding, again, the correct answer is neither.
Mm.
But what would you rather have? A power play that's fifth in the league and being worthless at 5-on-5? Or 5-on-5 being fifth in the league and power play being worthless? Like, the better plan is to be 5-on-5. Power play is how many minutes a game? Six?
Mm-hmm.
Eight? I mean, we lived a life where Ralph Kruger thought that the power play drove 5-on-5, the thing he said on the radio once, that that's the engine of our 5-on-5, which is, I mean...
Did he really say that?
He really said that.
That's
yeah,
amazing.
We get momentum from our power play.
I could see it being important, but I... Even like critical, but driving, I don't even know how you would say it would drive 5-on-5.
Definitely, there's no case to be made that it would ever do that. So, I don't know the answer.
There are like some good, like they have a good third line
right now.
And I wasn't sure of that.
Like, McLeod looks like a great acquisition.
McLeod looks very good.
It's tough not.
Greenway, listen, to me, looks like a completely different player than the end of last year. He looks amazing.
Is it any coincidence that those are two of the newest additions? Like, I was thinking about that last night. I mean, here's Lafferty and Beck Malenstein, and I don't know, whatever.
Zucker's on the third
Zucker,
line.
Like, you've got some new guys. But with McLeod, like, here's, you went and acquired a piece with a specific mold in mind, and you paid a big price, and you got it. You needed, like, three of those moves. Specific, we need this, we'll pay that, and McLeod looks like a really nice player. And, you know, like, it's just to say everyone's frustration on the Sabres is so expired, if I could say that. Like,
yeah,
it's you open the milk in the fridge that expired 5 years ago and take another whiff of it. You're like, wow, it's still bad. Like, that's it's kind of what it feels like every time you're talking about them.
I think everyone's just emotionally exhausted.
Right, and I guess what I'm trying to say is, last night was a Pittsburgh game. I've seen it 30,000 times. It's super annoying. Mm-hmm. I hate their goal horn. It makes me want to fight. And at the end of the day, I have to be careful. I came into this three-game trip, said to you, minimum four, five is good, six mm-hmm. is great. Four and five are still there, and win mm-hmm. tonight. Win tonight, then beat Chicago, and it's five. Five out of six. So in the midst of I want you to get this in the next three games, it's a little bit like the Bills just went on a three-game road trip, and we said the most important game is the Jets game. They won the most important game. The other two, mm-hmm. okay, we've got problems here, and the Bills, of course, deserve benefit of the doubt, whereas the Sabres really have to earn that from everybody. So I don't want to make every single loss from them doom and gloom. They lost a pair of games in Prague that were mm-hmm. terrible. They lost a game against the Kings they should have won. And last night, it's Pittsburgh. It's what happens. It's annoying.
The one thing that does come out of that, like, into that. Columbus tonight. Columbus, by the way, who I believe will have a backup goaltender.
Okay.
Because Merzlikins is taking a few days away from the team. I don't know what that is. That could even be, like, Goudreau emotions. I don't know. Like, because that's kind of how they sounded about it. So they'll get a backup goalie tonight against a bad team, and then Chicago, who's also a bad team. Short term, I can get into, like, all right, you win these two against bad teams and, like, all right, some optimism. The one thing that is bigger picture to me last night that is definitely doom and gloom is their second line center has looked like trash for 12 months. And can I saw this again on Twitter last night. Is it really possible that a fight at the beginning of last season broke Dylan Cousins forever? Because he's under contract for seven more years. At $7.1 million, and he looks like he can't play hockey right now.
He looks like an absolute shadow of himself.
He looks like he can't play center anymore also. Like, whenever he's in the middle of the... Last night, actually, the worst play he made was on the wall, I know. But very often when he's in the middle of the ice and he's got to make a decision with where to go with the puck, he looks like he has tunnel vision and he's no idea where to go with it. He looks lost all the time and he's not scoring on his opportunities. And that's got to turn around because that's a huge investment they made for a long time. He was a high pick, I mean, a few years ago, and they traded Casey Mittelstadt. So there's no longer a plan B if he can't be your second line center.
Right. You went all in on the two guys you had.
So and that, there was like that right now is job one. But well, I guess job one is the overall team and, you know, playing smarter from Lindy. But Granato used to have these pet projects, right? Like each player turning them around. It was Dahlin originally, Tage. Like Lindy, if there's one guy he's got to turn around, like it absolutely has to be Cousins because he is killing them right now. Absolutely killing them. Maybe that's what's dragging Quinn down, too. I don't know what's going on with him. But his centerman is just, I don't even know what to say about him. There's no good place. Not even defensively, which is another thing he was supposed to be good at.
Right. Tage looks okay.
Yeah, Tage looks good. 3 goals in the season.
Yep.
It's like a 40-goal pace.
803-0550, our phone number. From Cousins, like if you think back to, when was the game against the Bruins? Was that New Year's Day? He strips Bergeron, and you're just like,
yes.
Oh, here is...
It was like new Bergeron sending out old Bergeron.
Here is the workhorse from Whitehorse. This is the guy. And yeah, he just doesn't have it right now. It's tough.
But it has been like 90 games of this. It's been a long time since he's been playing well.
Go to the phones. Paul in Buffalo. What do you think, Paul? Are we barking up the right trees here?
Boys, you just went right to where I was going. In the last 87 games, I would say in fully 70 of them, that's 7-0, he hasn't been good or bad. He's been awful. In the other 17 games, when Austin Matthews is in the other faceoff dot, in the couple games when Connor McDavid's in the faceoff dot, when he puts on a Team Canada jersey, he is the workhorse from Whitehorse. But in 70 of those games, he's his new nickname, Vaclav Virata. Because he cannot score on an empty soccer net, just like Vaclav Virata. He makes stupid giveaways, just like Vaclav Virata. He's fake tough, just like Vaclav Virata. Now, he makes a paycheck, Virata never made. But this guy cannot be our second-line center anymore. I'm sorry. He lost us that game last night. I mean, there's some things you got to deal with. When Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin are on a mission, you know, they can make Owen Power look silly in his own end because Owen Power still is, he's young. He doesn't have his defensive knowledge yet that he's going to have in a couple years. But Cousins lost us that game. That line was awful. And that line's awful because of Cousins. I would right now, and you guys know I have been hard on Krebs. Krebs is my second line center. He needs to be in the press box for 2 or 3 nights.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, I'm ready to move Cousins from center. He mentioned Team Canada. Paul Hamilton has mentioned repeatedly for a couple years now that whenever he goes to play in the World Championships, he plays amazing, and it's the World Championships, take it with a grain of salt, but he plays on the wing. Like, he does show up to Team Canada, he plays on the wing, and I tweeted this out last night, like, I'm very much thinking now that he's not a center. I don't know. He just, try it on the wing, but... Again, where I end up then is what Paul in Buffalo just mentioned, which is what am I doing at second line center? It's going to be Krebs now. It's going to I like McLeod, but they're going to trust a guy whose career high in goals is 12 to be a top 6 centerman. I think I'm not kidding when I say this. I think Zach Benson could really be their second line center for the future. He has so many natural tendencies that scream center, but he is 170 pounds and skating wise, it's still not there for him. So intelligence-wise, I think Benson is going to be their center someday in that spot, but I don't think he's ready for it right now. So what do? You just keep hammering him in there and hope that you get a different result? Or do you try one of your bottom 6 centers up to... You're not in a good spot. And I wanted them to trade Mittelstadt for Byram when they did it. I loved that trade when it happened. I thought that made sense. We had talked about that as a concept, trading him for a top 4 defenseman for months before it happened. And I, right now, if I could hit a giant redo button, I would do it in a heartbeat. And it has nothing to do with Byram at all. Byram's fine. Byram's good. It's because I think they need a second line center. And I'm wishing they had Casey Mittelstadt still on the roster. Who, by the way, is the second line center in one of the best teams in hockey right now in Colorado.
Well, careful. They're 0-4.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know that.
Colorado started 0-4.
I still would want to call them one of the best teams in hockey. They'll be fine.
They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Hey, the Sabres are ahead of Colorado.
All right. There you go.
3 points up on Colorado. 803-0550. Sabres frustrations, you know, the airing of grievances. It's a rite of passage in mid-October to be in this spot.
And they've had some good starts in the drought.
They have. Like two, maybe at least. Yeah.
They had like a 5-1 start under Kruger, maybe? I don't remember.
Malkin.
Yeah. That would have been hilarious if Lindy could have challenged that for some reason.
Oh, speaking of which,
after they all come out and celebrate, and then they're like, you know, I think that might have been offside, guys.
How about the play that was offside? They challenged it. I guess it was offside. Listen.
It was so tight. It was so tight, but I did see a freeze frame where, to me, I would have said that's offside, but I don't know.
Sure, sure. I can't bring my brain doesn't have the power to watch an offside challenge on a grainy iPad and say, clearly that shows it. If you can't tell from the first row of the 300 level, it's not offside. That's my rule. That is my rule. Show, and I want to watch it on, you hold an iPad at center ice, and I watch that iPad from the 300 level. If I can see offside, that's offside. Otherwise, forget it. Every time it happens, even though that was for the Sabres and could have benefited the Sabres. Hey, here's a great moment in a hockey game. Look at this, an exciting sporting event. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Hold on. Was he a millimeter offside? My God. Let's have the officials watch an iPad.
That's the other thing, too.
It's like, just incredible.
Even if we could get past the stupidity of the concept in the first place, get to how they review it. Yeah.
Incredible.
An iPad. There's no replay center that's like ready to go. Like, you know, billion-dollar organization can have three people employed every night to look it offsides.
They can talk with Toronto, right? But then, like, who makes the call?
But I only think they talk with Toronto on, like goal stuff. Well, I guess that is a goal, but maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know what their process is. We need an eye in the sky.
Back to it tonight for Columbus. Hey, the Bills introduced Amari Cooper and starting to see a little bit more breakdown of some of the stuff he does. I saw a really cool video. Emmanuel Acho, LeSean McCoy, that show, Chase Daniel, what's that called? The
facility.
Thank you. I was going to say the fit. The facility. They had a good couple clips on Cooper and what makes him different from other wide receivers in the league and someone that the Bills definitely don't have. So we'll get to that. Excited to see his debut. The Bills are slow playing it and managing expectations when it comes to how quickly he could be a part of their offense. Then again, Davante Adams is going to play for the Jets against the Steelers, so I wonder what's different, or if anything's different. 803-0550. It's a Thursday. Chilly out there. I had to get ice off my windshield, Joe. Frost.
Mm-hmm. I'm thought to do this. I started the car early.
It was that cold.
Just to get the defrosters going.
But it's
going to
be nice the next couple days. We're getting back up into the 60s. So, you know, take heart. Still have plenty of golf weather. 70 next Tuesday. Come on.
I'm golfing today.
I am too.
It's going to be 52.
We're warming up. We got 2 weeks of warm.
I did bring an extra layer, though, so I might have to layer up. Which, you ever just swing with layers on?
Yeah, layered golf is great.
It's fine. Just got to make sure it's loose clothing.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. 803-0550 to join us, Broncos and Saints, on Thursday Night Football this evening as well. We'll chat with Sal. We'll chat with Nathan Zagura, the radio analyst in Cleveland, about Amari Cooper. All coming up here on WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Paterka is in behind everybody. Puck finds him in the Penguin zone. Paterka scores! J.J. Paterka with a beautiful goal has tied the game with 9:44 remaining in this third period in Pittsburgh.
One of the Firth moments of the game. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. It was very much a beautiful goal. Paterka's great. Paterka's great. Need 12 Paterkas.
Oh, he had two other breakaways, though. There were three breakaways in the second period that I think I need one more goal on.
It's another one. Like
Benson had one.
They should have won the game. They lost. They got a point.
I think they're 0 for 5 on breakaways this year.
That's not good.
That includes the McLeod at a penalty shot earlier in the year. Yeah, they're getting chances. But
this week in the NFL, we'll watch both Amari Cooper and Davante Adams see if they make their debuts. I think I saw that on the Pat McAfee show that Brandon Bean said he'll be a part of what they're going to do. And then they kind of walked that back a little bit over the course of the day. So we got to, you know, be careful what we expect from Cooper in his first game. But Bean's initial comment to the Pat McAfee show was like, yeah, he's going to be part of it.
Is a receiver an easier position to do that with?
I think so.
Because you can control, you can, hey, we're going to focus mostly on these four special plays for you, right? Or routes or simple concepts. You don't, if you're Cooper, you don't have to know the whole play, right? Like you do see, if you ever see a quarterback calling a play in the huddle,
yeah.
Oftentimes you'll see the receiver leave the huddle while he's still calling the play because they only have to listen to like the first part of it. So it would be easier for Cooper, I think, than maybe some other positions to jump right in because you can dictate what he's doing. Last year, Rasul Douglas, you have no idea what's going to be thrown at him from an offense. Cooper, right. You know what you can throw at the defense with him.
Yeah, I think it's reasonable to expect he'll play and be in there a little bit.
You also might not need him a lot because you're a 7-point favorite this week?
8.5.
8.5? 8.5.
I haven't checked it, but they started as the biggest favorite on the board.
Okay.
8.5. Question for you. You said that Cooper was offered two numbers. Was it 18 and 19?
I didn't know what the other one was.
Because initially, I thought the report was he was going to wear 19, and he is going to wear 18.
Yes. I thought maybe there was someone on the practice squad that wore 19 that they didn't want to take it from. If you go to the Bills roster, there is nobody listed, though, with number 19. So, yeah, I don't know. He said I only had two options.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was reported 19, and then they showed up, and it was 18.
But it's weird because, I guess I am looking at a list of only the active rosters. Maybe we should look at the practice squad, too, because there's 12 you can't do because of Kelly. 14, 15, 16 are all not taken. Are there numbers in the 80s that are available? There are a few. 89 is not on the active roster, but again, I'll look. Maybe there's some practice squad guys.
It's a big question if he can overcome the number 18. It's not a great one.
No?
No.
It's Marvin Harrison Jr.'s number.
Okay.
Who else? There's not good 18 receivers?
Theory. Now that you said it's Marvin Harrison Jr.'s number, I have a bigger theory. This theory is going to expand. What was the review of Marvin Harrison Jr. the first game he played? He was too
he was really slow.
Yeah. It's a slow number.
Uh-huh.
Who else wore 18? Peyton Manning, the slowest man alive.
So I think we're saying Peyton Manning ruined the number 18 forever.
Can you remember any other Bills to wear 18?
Naaman Roosevelt.
Yes. Ryan Fitzpatrick gave him a shout-out yesterday. Who else?
The 18 is going to be...
First one that came to
mind. Kyle Orton.
That was the first one that came to mind for me. Yep.
Okay. Quarterback. He was slow.
Case Keenum.
18's a great... Wait a minute. 18, I'm looking right now. 18's a great receiver number.
Who else wore
AJ Green wore number 18.
Slow.
Justin Jefferson wears number 18. Dare you to call him slow. Sidney Rice, Jeremy Maclin.
People don't give...
Calvin Ridley wore 18.
It stinks. They don't give Jefferson enough credit for lifting 18 out of the Earth's core to be a good number. All right, fine. Jefferson...
Dante Stallworth wore number 18. Okay. He was really
fast. All right, you've convinced me.
Yeah, I'm in. Randy Moss wore number 18 with the Raiders. He was bad then, though, right?
No, he's probably good. The Raiders are just bad. All right, well, good.
I'm fine with it.
You've convinced me. The Jefferson does it. Jefferson's fine.
Like, if he wore number 83, it would have been a lot worse, I think.
That's Andre Reed. People might have been mad.
Oh, sorry. You can't do 83. All right, if he wore number 80, what would be the worst number he could have wore? 85?
Yeah. I saw a stat for this Bills game on Will Levis that there are two quarterbacks in the NFL that are horrendous if you just take away their deep passing. You might guess who the other one is. These two quarterbacks actually hit some deep passes occasionally, and everything else they do, they are horrible at. Do you know who the two quarterbacks are? It's Levis is number two.
Levis is one of them. That was a thing last year where he only threw it short or long and nothing in the middle.
Yes, and the only thing he did well or got like EPA on was long throws.
Yeah.
Anthony Richardson.
Oh, sure.
Basically, Anthony Richardson on deep throws gives you a lot, and on everything else is terrible. Levis is second. And if you're thinking about a matchup between the Bills and the Titans, what do the Bills take away? Your long throws?
Oh, yeah.
Will Levis is going to have a tough day.
Yeah. Forcing him into dumb decisions also, you would think, whatever they throw at him defensively. By the way, thank you to those on Twitter. KJ Hamler is the one who wears number 19 on the practice squad. Levis, someone that makes giant mistakes the way the Bills operate, which is basically, hey, take these little plays, take the shorter plays. We're going to dare you to get bored, right? It's kind of the concept of all this. We're going to dare you to get bored, and we're going to bet that eventually you're going to take a shot when you shouldn't, or you're going to make a mistake. We're going to bet that you can't put together a 12 to 15 play drive, and you're going to make a giant gaffe. And there's nobody in the league, given that James Winston's on the bench in Cleveland still, there's nobody in the league that I think is more prone to making giant mistakes than Levis is. He's fun to watch, but he's almost beyond what Allen was in his first 2 years. Like I made that comparison that Allen in 2019 kind of reminds me of Levis right now. Big arm. And he wants to run over you. He wants to jump over you. He wants to do crazy things. And, you know, he's just raw. He's raw and he's not consistent. That was Allen. But, you know, you do look at Allen in that second year. And here's Levis in his second year. And Allen in his second year, like, he had started to put it together. Like, he was very much a game manager type of quarterback that also was an elite runner. He was a way better runner than Levis is right now. That's another big part of it. But if you look at that second year for Allen, he threw 9 interceptions. He actually hasn't, that's his career low. That season, throwing 9 interceptions was his career low. And sure, there were some fumbles too. But what Levis is doing right now, he has 7 interceptions already on the season through 5 games. Like, he is on pace to obliterate what Allen was in his second year. So there are some comparables, I think, between an early career Josh Allen and Will Levis. I think Levis is just goes beyond it. I think there are more mistakes that he makes that Allen has a reputation for, but the numbers kind of show that it wasn't as bad as his reputation probably was. And this going on with Levis, like, Levis, that is not true. Like, Levis is as bad at making mistakes as the reputation is. Man, his numbers, too. 139 yards per game. I mean, that is abysmal. He did in one game leave early, so maybe that'll attribute to that a little bit as well. QBR of 27. Like, really, if you look at it, this is probably the worst quarterback that the Bills are going to play all year. They'll play Richardson, who we just mentioned, who is only able to do the long ball in week 10. They'll play maybe a Miami backup in week 9, although it probably is Tua by that point. And then they'll play like Drake May later in the year, but Drake May looked good. So, like, this is probably the worst quarterback that the Bills are gonna play all year. 803-0550 is the phone number. If you got a thought on Cooper's edition or anything Bills related ahead of the Titans game coming up on Sunday, or if you got a Saber thought, feel free to call in as well. It's Jeremy and Joe. 803-0550 is the phone number here on WGR.
It's uncharted territory for me. The one time I did get traded, a mid-season, you know, the Cowboys, they had a bye week that same week, so I kind of had a lot of time to prepare, to know the system and things of that nature. So this is definitely new for me. At the end of the day, it's just football, you know. I think I'm a pretty cerebral guy, at least cerebral enough to learn the playbook as fast as I can, so I can go out there and get lined up and just run routes, catch the ball, get open. you know, compete in the run game.
You know, one thing that's Amari Cooper, Joe, one thing I feel like I've noticed from the last 24, 48 hours is Amari Cooper has a lot of guys in the NFL that think he's just a pro's pro. Like, you know who's really good? Amari Cooper's good. You see a lot of that. He drove from Cleveland to Buffalo yesterday. If you're not on Twitter and didn't see it, good. I'll now give you my top five favorite sights on the Cleveland to Buffalo drive.
All right.
Number five, that crazy bend in Cleveland that's so hard that you have to hit the ruts on the way there when you're driving to it. It's like, brr, brr,
brr, and there's like gigantic brr, signs.
Signs, yeah. Yeah, of course, landmark, the bend. They call it Dead Man's Curve, I was told after announcing. It's my number five. This is probably not really in order here. Number four, Ashtabula.
What is that?
It's a city in Cleveland. It's just fun to say.
Oh, okay.
Ashtabula.
Ashtabula?
Say it.
Ashtabula.
Go ahead, Josh. Say it.
Ashtabula.
Isn't that fun?
I always, whenever I drive by, I have to say it three times in my head before I say it out loud because I never know how to say it.
Ashtabula. I once spent the night in Ashtabula after that Bills 8-0 blizzard game they lost.
Classic.
The snow was so bad coming back, we pulled off the road and spent the night in Ashtabula.
How was it?
Fine.
All right. Ashtabula.
We stayed at like a chain hotel because... Mm. It's kind of a remote area, even though it's Ashtabula. I don't remember the name, if it was like a whatever, not important. Spent the night there.
Okay.
Number three, the stretch in Ohio with the really tall lights.
Oh, yes. Okay.
My favorite thing about...
Now I know where we're at.
My favorite thing about tweeting out this list was listing my five favorite things between Cleveland and Buffalo on the drive, and not one person said, "What do you mean?" about the tall lights, because everybody knows.
Yeah, you know the tall lights. Oh, even if you've only done like a couple times, I think like I've only done that a couple drives, and I know the tall
lights. There's just like 2 miles where they have giant lights.
They're huge.
Why?
Because they're like every 10 feet?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like a city street.
Yeah.
Tall lights, overhead lights, like maybe like by the 271 interchange.
Yeah.
No, that's number three. Number two, top five things you see on the Cleveland to Buffalo drive. That 5 minutes where you can see the lake.
Yes, it's only 5 minutes.
It's very short.
Yeah. You're always near the lake, but you can't really see it
for about five minutes max. And number one, the TA Travel Center. I actually like to look this up. There's one travel center that we stop at every time. It's the same spot every time. You're not even planning to stop, but when you have to pull over because you have to go to the bathroom or get something to eat or get gas,
it's always the
same spot. And there's a lot going on there. Those are the top five sites on the Cleveland to Buffalo drive. Any others jump out at you? If you want me to do Buffalo to Syracuse, I mean, holy cow, I can give you a mile-by-mile breakdown of that 90.
I just did that drive. Well, I did more than that drive. I went to New York.
But. Which is worse, 90 West or 90 East? Which is more boring?
West.
I think it's got to be 90 East.
West. I was saying East, yeah.
East is worse.
Although, to be fair, I just did East, and everything was like fall colors, and like it was a little better. It was a little better.
Time of year definitely makes a difference.
That might be right.
Yeah. East, time of year made it a lot better.
East, you get a hint of Rochester, you go through Syracuse, and then it is nothing
Albany. You get to Binghamton. Well,
Binghamton's 81.
Yeah, okay, never mind.
West, you know, you see a little lake. Yeah. You get through Cleveland's a big deal.
Erie before that, too. You get to Erie, get some donuts.
But you don't actually go into Erie. You go into Cleveland on the 90. Anyway, there you go. Hope you enjoyed this drive. Beautiful, beautiful scenic 90.
Yeah.
803-0550 is our phone number. Sal joining us at 8 o'clock. Nathan Zagura, who is a radio analyst for the Browns, coming up at 8:30. And we got a Thursday three-way parlay for Thursday Night Football. The Sabres are back at it tonight as well, playing against the Blue Jackets. So you can give us a call if you want. When we get back, I want to ask the question. I've got a Twitter poll. Who leads the Bills in receptions from this point forward? Cooper, Shakir, Kincaid. We'll kick that around, get your thoughts, and... give you the results of the poll. You can vote in it as well. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.